Okay, Josh, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I think we should revisit the impact of COVID-19 on the media tech sector. It's been, I guess, about 4 months since we recorded a podcast about this. And of course, during that time, you and I have been talking internally about what's happening in the market now is going to affect the media companies, their tech budgets, and therefore, by extension, the tech suppliers and service providers in this industry.
Definitely.
Maybe the best way to do this is to walk through a scenario about the media technology suppliers.
I know something about that space.
So I'll walk through the scenarios that we've been talking about internally. Then, when I'm done with that, I need you to do me a favor.
Happy to.
I need you to tell me why it's wrong.
Okay, let's do this. Extemporaneous.
Here we go. So the first thing is the impact on the media companies and their advertising revenue, and the downstream effect that has on tech suppliers. Last week, Disney's results came out. Their advertising revenue is down 41% in their media networks. However, their broadcast network revenue is only down 11%. That implies that the majority of the revenue shortfall in advertising was from cable networks, which include the assets that they bought from Fox, but also include ESPN, which is obviously associated with live sports and a big buyer of media tech. Similarly, ITV in the UK published their results. Revenue down there 43%, withdrew their guidance. Given that these advertising and revenue shortfalls probably trickle down and negatively impact tech budgets, that's not a good one. So that's the first one. Number two, cord cutting is clearly up. Streaming is up. Cord cutting leads to lower retransmission revenues, and that again is a negative for media company revenue and profit, which potentially weighs on media tech companies. Number three is projects. Over the past 3, 4 months, we must have had conversations with 100, probably more, executives from broadcasters, media companies around the world, and also technology suppliers and systems integrators. What we heard from the broadcasters is that if they had a project that was budgeted and along the way to completion, once they could get back in the building or restart that project, they did. However, some of them have also said they are not spending money on some projects that they had planned to do. And in many cases, the CFO has said there's no spend unless there's a less than 12-month payback. If you recall, the second podcast that we did was with Pat Sullivan, the president and CEO of Game Creek Video. He said they had been in the process of building 5 IPOB trucks. They had completed 3 of those. One was very far along, 80-90% done. The other was 60-70% done. He said they were going to complete those 2 trucks. And then after that, he said, we're not going to spend any more money, at least in a meaningful way, on tech until 18 months after things get back to normal. So I don't know what normal is, but normal could take a while if you're assuming 2019 revenue levels. So that could be something like 18 months plus another 18 months after that, that one company. It stands to reason that other similar service providers are maybe thinking the same thing. That's not to say there are no projects. There are some quite big projects, probably things that are well known, for example, regional sports networks in the United States, and they're carrying on. And that's great because that's driving revenue for everybody who's involved. On the positive side, I guess, companies have also said that they're not traveling. Now, some media companies have told us they're not traveling through the end of 2021, which has implications for trade shows perhaps and conferences, but they're saving a lot of money by not doing that. And that's on the vendor side as well as on the media company side.
Are you going to let me jump in here at
Yes,
some point? Right. All right.
let me just lay it out here. And I think I
All
have two
right.
more points. And my last point, I think, is one of your areas of expertise. So you're going to get to really lean in there.
All right.
So let me just finish these last two.
All right.
The next one is about government stimulus. And of course, you and I are most familiar with the stimulus plans in the United States here, specifically the PPP or Paycheck Protection Plan. And of course, there are similar programs all over the world. We're just more familiar with this one. Firstly, PPP was designed to help small businesses. The Small Business Administration, the definition of a small business is less than 500 employees. When we've talked about this, we struggle to come up with a very long list of companies, particularly on the tech provider side, that have more than 500 employees. So, kind of by definition, this is an industry made up of small businesses. And by the way, that includes companies not domiciled in the U.S. that have offices here. So, for example, NetInsight, who has an office in Florida because they bought Schedule, had, I think, $1 million PPP loan they talked about in their earnings call the other week. And even some of the ones that are bigger than 500 employees, Quantum, Avid, for example, received PPP $10 million for Quantum, $7.8 million for Avid. So it stands to reason that everybody applied for that and probably lots of companies received those loans. That program was designed to last for approximately 8 weeks. Those 8 weeks ended. Now, who knows what's going to happen? A lot of talk over the weekend about a new program, but nothing set in stone yet. And those programs have been great because they've allowed companies to have confidence to keep their employees. They haven't been traveling, which is good. They've been saving lots of money. We've heard that from lots of people. Harmonic last week in their earnings said they'd save something like $5 million in the first half of the year by not going to shows, not traveling. And that's given people more uninterrupted time, maybe working from home on R&D projects and other things. So that's all great. But that program is over. And if there is a prolonged downturn in tech spending, none of these, by definition, small businesses, or most of them anyways, have the type of big balance sheet that's going to enable them to withstand a prolonged period, month after month, quarter after quarter, of a downturn in demand. That could lead to all kinds of things down the road. Now, of course, there are some companies that are doing really well, and we've talked about that before. And then my final point, and one I am concerned about on multiple fronts, is sports, initially college sports. If they can't have students back on campus, how are they going to have sports in the fall, particularly football? We saw one of the major conferences over the weekend say they are going to cancel all fall sports, including football. And of course, football pays for everything, more or less. I'm sure you'll talk about it. College sports in general, but college football in particular, drives a lot of revenue for broadcasters and media companies. If that doesn't happen, if that goes away, there's going to be a big hole in those ad budgets. That's going to lead to people cutting the cord. So that could potentially be a drag on the ad revenue of those broadcasters, but also the retransmission. So it all kind of piles on, and less revenue arguably means there's going to be less for tech. Certainly we've heard that from broadcasters. So you and I have talked about what we call extinction level events for the media tech product and service providers. COVID-19, the pandemic, could be one of those. An extinction level event for some of the companies in this industry. And that's just one of potentially multiple extinction level events that are happening at the same time. Another one being the move to cloud, move to IP, not as much, but there's some really big changes that are happening. And the customers at this point are experiencing some headwinds, to say the least. And it's not hard to imagine that's going to flow down to the tech vendors and some tough times for them. So those are the points that you and I have talked about. I'd like you to tell me why that is wrong and that everything's actually going to be hunky-dory for the media tech sector.
So if I rephrase then, in these times of darkness, where is the sunlight? Is that what you're asking for? So my intellectual jujitsu is...
I mean, sure, no. But I'm not looking for Pollyanna, because
no.
I'm not trying to be negative, not trying to be Debbie Downer, but at the same time, not trying to be like super, everything's going to be great, because I think that you're the guy that's always going on about there's a need for serious conversations. People aren't having serious conversations.
I am, and I'll use that as part of this. So everything you described, I don't disagree with it. But my view of optimism is in part based on the story that you just weaved. So I look at it this way. This is going to necessitate structural reforms in our industry that we have been putting off for a generation, at least as long as I've been around.
Who's the we?
We as the industry, the customers, the sellers, and a lot of the third parties involved in the buying and selling. So I always pick on the trade shows. Let's pick on the trade shows, right? Those are not good uses of sales and marketing funds to the extent they have been built up over, you know, a generation of thinking you have to have a bigger booth or your booth is somehow representative of the health of your business.
Absolutely. You know, having worked for vendors before and having put those booths together, it's just a massive amount of money and time and effort. And I personally don't think they're coming back anytime soon, if at all, in the form. And again, we had a conversation with Jeff Rosica.
Yep.
He said, if you think things are going back to normal with trade shows specifically, they're not.
So let's stay on that point, right? We as an industry have to make structural reforms. We're not politically connected enough to get the type of salvation from any kind of fiscal authorities that's going to allow us to persist in doing business the old way. So we talked about trade shows, just so staying with the suppliers, right? The managed providers have to look themselves in the mirror and confess that they are not adding value in their business models. They just, in fact, in some respects, are just banks, all right? They have to fundamentally change their value proposition. That's a decision that they cannot put off any longer.
I'm not sure I'd agree with you on many of the service providers. Yeah. They do add value, or people wouldn't use them. Having said that, some of them have...
Not sufficient to pay their debt loads.
Well, that's exactly my point. So, they have a lot of debt, and it's difficult to see how they're ever going to generate enough revenue to service that debt. That goes for some of the vendors, too.
Let's build up a little speed here, look at
the Post guys. Look, the Technicolor's in bankruptcy. Yeah. Deluxe is in bankruptcy.
Just got out. Yeah. Things are challenging right now for Prime Focus. There are others that have now taken PPP loans here in the States. But we still have product managers sitting around hoping for some upgrade cycle tied to UHD and HD. It's not going to happen.
I agree.
Right?
I agree. Yeah. We spoke to a company, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and they're like, oh, we think there's going to be a V-shaped recovery because all the service providers are going to upgrade for 4K and HDR for sports.
Yeah.
I personally...
It's not going to happen. We are crushing these myths that no amount of logic could crush. So you think about, you know, talking about the long tail of events, or as 11 Sports in their rebrand just called it, the new tail of events.
Just explain what 11 Sports is for me, the uninformed.
This is a UK-based business, although a good portion of their revenue is coming from Italy and Belgium and Portugal, where they're getting rights to slightly lower tier, you know, sporting events. And they're creating an OTT subscription service.
They're still professional sporting events, but not like high school volleyball or something.
Exactly. But in 2018, the most recent year for their accounts being available, that was a £50 million business.
Sorry, 5-0 or 1-5?
5-0, and was not profitable on a gross profit basis. Now, they have now stated, okay, we're profitable. But I would really encourage people to have a serious conversation about how big that market is and what the profit potential is.
It's not for you to judge that. If that company built a business and now they're profitable,
absolutely.
Why should they go out of business, or why should they go away? Because you think $50 million in profit isn't pounds is not enough.
No, don't misunderstand me. What I'm saying is we have to understand the size of that opportunity. So if you're a technology supplier and you are believing that we're going to commercialize this real long tail of events and it's going to look anything like the CapEx that you get out of an organization like NEP or Game Creek, or, you know, just go on down the line, Euromedia, it's not going to happen. You're going to be disappointed in how that turns out. It was never real. So, you know, you give the example of collegiate athletics in the States. Decisions are going to have to be made in the next weeks in regards to these athletic programs. So Ivy League has canceled fall sports. A lot of the lower tier divisions, Division III, the FCS, they have canceled.
Division II as well.
Yeah, 1AA.
So Josh, if college football in particular, because it pays for lots of things, and basketball at other schools like Villanova, the Wildcats, but football pays for a lot of everything. If that goes away or doesn't come back, not just delayed, but is canceled for the year, it has in massive ramifications. Not just for media, but for these educational institutions and the other programs that they do.
There, of course, is the scenario where no football is played. So Wisconsin and Penn State have now said on the record that they would lose $100 million if football is not paid from their athletic budgets.
Played.
If it's not played at all.
Yeah.
But even as it stands, playing it without fans in the stands, so that's maybe 60%, you know, plus of the revenue of your program is going to be those, you know, 7-8 home games that you get each year. But let's look at the lower tier events. So I want to focus here. Bowling Green is a university in your home state.
In my home state of Ohio, yep.
Do you know their nickname by any chance?
The Green Hornets.
No.
The Red Sparrows?
Oh,
the Falcons.
Okay. All right. They had games scheduled with Ohio State and Illinois. And the way the economics work in football is a school like Bowling Green will be paid by Ohio State, which is, do you know their nickname?
The Buckeyes. Yeah.
Right.
Ohio, for those who don't know, is the Buckeye State, and it's called the Ohio State University.
Settle down. All right. So Bowling Green, it will earn, you know, a couple million dollars by going and playing a game against Ohio State in the
Horseshoe.
Yes, in Columbus, Ohio, right? Because they can get 100,000 people in there to watch them play, you know, the local high school team here. It's just rabid fan base, right? So Bowling Green was also set to go play Illinois. Do you know their nickname?
The Fighting Illini.
You do. All right. And they play in?
Illinois.
Champaign, Illinois. So they were set to go play Illinois. But those two games, so the Big Ten has canceled that. They're just going to play a conference schedule. They're not going to play non-conference teams.
Notre Dame, too, out of luck.
Notre Dame is sufficiently lucrative that they were able to sneak into the ACC. But just to crisp up this point, right? So those two games represented 10% of the athletic department budget for Bowling Green.
Budget or revenue?
Well, both, right? So revenue and budget. So even if Bowling Green were able to play sports this year.
And what is that, like $5 million between those two games?
No, it's like two or three. And Bowling Green has a budget, athletic department budget of, you know, $20, $25 million, right? So what decisions does Bowling Green now have to make, right? You can't just go make up that money. You can't borrow it, right? So you have to make very painful cuts into your athletic department. So when people say, oh, but we can do some automated production, we can have some cameras without cameramen. No. All those discretionary spends, that's not going to happen. Probably going to have to get rid of entire sports programs just from those two games. being canceled. So set aside the fact that Bowling Green can't get any revenue from having people in the stands with their further football team. And perhaps at the end of the day, they won't even play a football. And in that instance, then they have to make even more drastic cuts. But I just say that's the type of dominoes that have already fallen. And it's only a matter of how much worse it gets.
Go through school after school after school where they've built these, you know, big stadiums, yeah, weight rooms, they have very expensive coaches. I mean, but they do rely on the fans.
Based on a lie, right? That's important, right? So they were based on an expectation of revenues, of profitable revenue streams and growing profitable revenue streams into the future, either from being able to monetize their other athletic programs or ever higher dollars paid for the sports rights for their football games and basketball games.
Or having fans come in. I mean, I think is it Texas Tech that has like 70% of the athletic budget comes from having 100,000 people in the stands?
Texas A&M, and they are the...
The agriculture and miners.
Yes,
Aggies.
Yes, the Aggies. They are the Aggies, yeah, yes, okay. And they play in Kyle Field, and you are absolutely right about the...
like 5 for 6
people.
Here.
But look at what they're paying their head coach. He's the highest paid state employee. Well, I'm sorry, they're not. I don't believe they're a public university, so, but we'll have to double check that. So anyway, so there was an unraveling of all collegiate athletics that was based on this just wishful thinking about the ever-growing value of sports. Right? It was never true. Anytime you looked at the numbers, it never worked out, with the noted exceptions of the Alabamas that everyone would point to, or the Duke basketball. I mean, but those were the exceptions that proved the rule. Anyway, to bring this back to full circle to what it matters for the tech vendors, if you have a business model or business plan that's predicated on the growth of production of lower tier events, you got to sharpen your pencil on that business plan. I would really encourage you to take a look at that through new eyes. But you did well in the nicknames there.
Yeah. Well, I'm embarrassed that the one that I didn't get is from my home state and one where we used to do like high school track meets.
Yes.
But maybe it was Baldwin Wallace. I don't know their nickname either.
Yeah, that one would even stump me.
The Green Flash. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get to it, but I was prepared to go through some of the budgets associated with college football programs. You look at your average, say, Pac-12 school, so sitting here on the West Coast, we'll talk about them, that collegiate association, they typically have budgets that run, say, $100 million to, say, $150 million. Football's probably 75, 80% of that revenue. You said yourself, it's probably not going to happen, or if it happens, it's not going to happen with fans. Maybe 60% of the revenue coming into a football, or at least 40% in the case of the pros, that's coming from the gate. So
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're making my point here. You're right, because people think, wow, these sports deals are so lucrative. You know, yeah. Turner's paying, I think, $1 billion to the NBA for the rights to show the NBA. But
yeah, so
the NBA is spending how much? $1.5 million a day? And talk about serious conversations. Everybody's like, wow, look at all the cameras they have.
Yes, and it's completely unsustainable, right? We could not do this next year. My point is, this is finally going to crush these myths that people have been putting off making difficult decisions because they wanted to believe that this was over the horizon, these opportunities. They're not real. And I think they're all at different stages of accepting that. Now we have to fundamentally restructure our business and our industry by extension. So you need new business models, not next year, not 2 years from now. You need them today. And even on the customer side, so I want to transition now to talk.
Stipulated, agree, not easy.
No, and that's why you need an event like this. We have to exhaust these other possibilities before we can do the right thing. We need to take some pain. There are going to be fewer suppliers for some time. The fewer the suppliers, the greater the share of honor, though. We finally can start to make these economics work. I would also say, though, because I want to transition to the customers here, we talked extensively at our Amsterdam event the last time we had a chance to, you know, get a nice gathering about what's going on with budgets inside of customers. Well, think about the events of the first half of this year, what it has done. It has shined a light on how valuable engineering groups are to these media organizations. The business continuity initiatives that were good, being able to keep everything on air, to make the NBA bubble work, or to get some of these other sports back online, or to do a lot of this post-production work without being able to go into the facility. I mean, this has been marvelous.
I agree completely. However, in the conversations that we've had, we talked to a very senior person at a really big international media company last week who said one of the outcomes of this is, I think that these organizations are going to be slimmed down. Why? Because we just proved we could do it with fewer people, fewer staff, with fewer support.
We're on the technology side, right? So this is made clear. A, engineering is really valuable. B, we are going to have some different conversations about how much we should be investing in technology. So just stay safe with the U.S. station groups. It is an embarrassment the current install base of technology that are in those station groups. How can you defend having 20, 25, 30-year-old equipment sitting in those studios?
I'll tell you exactly how you defend that. 25, 30 years ago when they were doing SD and then they upgraded to HD, less than 25 or 30 years ago, they could sell an HD commercial for exactly 0 cents more than they could sell an SD commercial. So it works. They're making the shows. Why would they massively upgrade it if it's still working?
Because of the events of the first half of this year. You finally are going to kill these sacred cows, because you're right. That's how we've thought for a generation. We haven't made any difficult decisions. We haven't stepped into any unknowns. We haven't done any innovation. You now have a once-in-a-generation opportunity. Because what are the two biggest issues as far as rolling out technology if you're in an engineering group? I'd say one is getting the budget, so convincing finance. I think that's going to become easier, too, because we now have shined a light on how valuable it is.
For the past four or 6 months, it's definitely been easier. Yeah. It's like, no question, do what you have to do.
And two, we'll push off for a second. I think you're finally going to get data as you move into cloud environments. But then I would also say the biggest impediment is user behaviors. Trying to change workflows is trying to change user behavior. And my goodness, what a gift we have now had in the first half of this year, where you no longer have to bang your head against the wall and trying to convince people to do things differently.
I agree completely. We've heard that things have changed in enormous ways, that there were all this internal resistance to change. Yeah. And because we couldn't do it because the team had to be together or these groups were disparate, all of those things went away and lots of progress was made.
Yeah.
Come back to one of your points there about, you know, shine a light on engineering. Yes, they've done a phenomenal job. Everything's on the air and they're heroes, right?
Yes.
Now, one question, and I'm not making this up, somebody's told us this, is what if they've already spent next year's budget being a hero this year?
Because next year's budget was already too low.
Okay.
And now, in becoming a hero, in removing the obstacles of workflow, having a more constructive conversation with finance, and being able to finally justify the value of your activities, I see a renaissance in budgets. And budgets are, if you flip it over, that is supplier revenue, right? So a more efficient supplier community and larger budgets, that equals larger profit pools and perhaps even larger revenue pools. But I'm more focused on the more sustainable aspects of that business relationship. So that is my case for optimism.
Since we're doing jujitsu and flipping things around, more efficient suppliers, bigger profit pool, you're describing an environment where there are fewer vendors.
Yes.
So you're saying they're going away? Well, they're going to be consolidation?
It has always been my view that the bigger vendors will get bigger and the smaller ones will get smaller, right? If you look at it on like a histogram. So in other words...
But without naming any names,
we're
not seeing the bigger vendors getting bigger.
We are seeing certain of the bigger vendors, the newer bigger vendors getting bigger.
Sure, like AWS.
Absolutely, but I would also say a lot of the bonded cellular suppliers, a lot of the suppliers of lower cost production gear are certainly seeing some real wind in their sales. And you can go on and on, right? The IT book of business is certainly growing in this industry. Certain other service providers like CDN, it might not be the most profitable revenue streams, but they are growing. So there are those examples. So you start to fast forward, right? If you have a fewer bigger Avids and Grass Valleys and Evertses, and then you have more of an ocean of, say, sub $10 million software businesses that are sitting in those ecosystems, that would be my vision of what starts to happen. So if you're somebody that's selling appliances and really kind of in a dedicated region, you know, $5 to $10 million of revenue, I don't have a lot of answers for you, right? But there aren't a lot of answers. You know, maybe within there's a, you know, $2 to $5 million really nice software business that can sit in the backs of some of those ecosystems, right? So, but those decisions, absent some external force, would never be made.
So, sorry, you're saying less big vendors and then more in the ocean of small vendors?
Yes, that's exactly what. So in aggregate, we might end up in the same place as far as total number of vendors, but it would be more concentrated.
Okay, so let's say that for, you know, off the top of my head, I'm a big media company, Viacom CBS merged. I think their revenue is $28 billion. So you're asking that gigantic organization to put all of its eggs in the basket of a $2 million company to $5 million software company?
No, and I'm glad you brought this up, right?
Okay. You're welcome. Well,
so this is a slightly nuanced point, right? So for the better part of, I'd say, a decade in our events, we've been getting, and we've even had CFOs come in, we've been getting, you know, important senior decision makers and saying, you know, does the stability of the company matter as far as your investment?
The stability of the technology.
Of the technology supplier, yeah. And I would submit to you, and I've gone full circle on this, I don't think there's any kind of proactive set of diligence or questions or balance sheet investigations that you can do of your suppliers that's really ever going to be a great indicator of whether or not you're going to be disadvantaged by going with them from some corporate event that happens to them. Maybe they get bought. If they're a really big company, maybe they get disinterested in the industry. If they're small, they go out of business. I don't think you can solve that proactively. But what we can now do within cloud environments, and I'm going to cite Renard Jenkins, the Renard's theorem of putting things together in Lego building blocks, real modular design, no strict deep integration of systems, but instead of just adapters and loosely coupled, you know, functional things such that you can pull out and put in pieces. You can just hot swap vendors throughout, you know, your tech stack, and you don't have the dependency that you're discussing there. And so you don't have to have some kind of clairvoyance of where that vendor's roadmap is going to be in 2 or 3 or 4 years. You can just prove it out in the sort of the battle of the trenches in your technology.
Yeah, I agree completely that that's the way things are going to go. Yep. That sounds fantastic for Renard. Again, my original hypothesis here was what happens to some of the tech suppliers. So in an environment where they can just be swapped out by somebody putting a hashtag into a piece of Python script, and then they don't know they've been swapped out until they don't get a check 6 weeks later, that's maybe not great. Now, but I think for the industry, I agree with you here that for the industry, it's probably better because there, you talked about trade shows, the amount of sales and marketing money, or just the amount of money that's spent on non-engineering, non-R&D things is really high. And we've heard from companies that have moved a lot of their stuff to the cloud. Like, I used to have 100 vendors, now I have 10, they're getting all my time and all my attention. Now, I'm spending smaller transactional amounts with them rather than a big one-off hardware deployment that includes cooling towers and electricity and everything else. So there should be a lot more customer intimacy and a direct connection between those people. And therefore, if those companies don't have to go and build big trade show booths and also just the travel everywhere. Now, we're a social animal, and this is a particularly social industry that's very spread out and people really enjoy coming together at these big events. But practically speaking, that's not going to happen for a while. So I agree from that perspective. Yeah. It's at some point good news, but in the immediate term, don't know.
But the immediate term is causing us to do those reforms. And just to pick up on what you said, that's a sword with two sharp edges when you say you can be removed from the workflow just by being commented out.
Sure, because I could be added too.
You can just be added. So you don't have to spend all that money trying to get in front of people. You just say, hey, mine's the best. Try it out for a week and look how much money you save now. I don't have to have a 10% or 20% bigger booth, or I don't have to sponsor something just to get in front of you. That is a pathway somewhere. Where we were was a pathway to nowhere. Right. If every year the budgets of these media companies just go down 5%, then the last person here turn out the lights. Right. It was a pathway nowhere. If we were going to have these meaningless discussions in these public forums about super resolution, or like just let's bring in some comedians or karaoke. I mean, look at how marginal that dialogue had gotten. So now we are having just a renaissance on discussions. And are having to enact the structural reforms that have needed to happen for a generation.
You know, I think it would be useful, and maybe we need a whiteboard or a slide or something here, but we've talked at our conferences and with clients about this kind of dichotomy of the money that gets spent on sales and marketing versus the money that gets spent on engineering and then the benefit to the customer. So if you spend a dollar with a vendor, it's going to produce X of R&D benefit to you. If you save a dollar by not spending, for example, you trade, if you're a public company, at 10 times EBITDA, that's worth $10.
Yep. Yes, it is. I weep a little inside because I think my analogy's been taken too far. Because if people just, if they view every dollar they spend on their engineering team as a dollar out of their mouth, then it causes them to make really bad short-term decisions. I'd use that more along like, if I invest a dollar and it causes savings of, you know, X or X, or say of $2, well, then if I trade it 10 times in the market, that's added $20
okay,
to my market.
Okay, I mean, maybe we skip that part, yeah. But I think the point that you've made before about technology as an investment rather than a cost, I accept that.
Yep.
Absolutely agree 1,000%.
Well, then, so let me make my strongest point then. So for an entire generation, I know I'm picking on, you know, this entire generation that just happened. You accomplished some great things, but, you know, this is...
Are you talking about me?
I am casting aspersions in general. Right?
For those of you that don't know, although Josh seems old-fashioned sometimes, he's a lot younger than I am, and probably too, probably a lot younger than a lot of people in this industry. So
yes.
Carry on.
Yeah. All right. So my point is, decision makers never had data to make decisions in our industry, or they had it at epochs in time, right? Like, oh, every 5 years or 10 years, I could kind of look back and say, hey, I'm doing a good job. Now, as we move into cloud environments, and as we're bringing a different level of financial sophistication to these media operations, we can now make decisions in near real time about what's best. So you give the example of certain of these cloud supply chains, they can understand who the best sort of series of vendors or what the best cadence is to run these functions in the cloud, such that they'll get the optimal output, which isn't necessarily the cheapest, right? There could be other factors at play about how it's going to affect the finished product. Those decisions can now be published and communicated to non-engineers. So you think of just being able to walk into finance or business decision makers and give them dashboards that show them exactly what they're getting out of this investment. I think that's going to create a virtuous cycle to increase these budgets. And it has to be just understood how pathetic the level of investment is in some of these media companies.
I don't disagree with that. But when we've done work for people that come into the industry, sometimes as a private equity company or somebody looking to buy a company, this industry requires, when you enter it, to kind of have the media technology 101 conversation. And one of the things that we've been saying for years and years is, there's this bifurcation in the market because there's live and there's everything else. What you just described as the everything else, which has always been as efficient as possible, do more for less. Previously, it would have been maybe with a service provider or sweating an asset. Now, maybe it's in a cloud. But where a lot of the value has been, and some of the most profitable businesses in the industry have been in live, in news and in sports and those types of things. There's lots of news right now and lots of people watching, but advertising revenue is down. Obviously, there's been no live events, no sports, nothing that's starting to trickle back now. And are things going to go to cloud production in the near future? One of the things that's happened, and I didn't mention this previously, is remote production or REMI or at-home production or home-run production. If you think about that, look at the NBA. They're in their bubble. They have 3 courts rather than 29. Even though they have lots and lots of cameras and people and whatever, in aggregate, it's probably, I don't know, 20% of what they would ordinarily be using and the people they're playing. I don't know the numbers. So it's more efficient, I agree. But my original point was, there's somebody that's got to sell tech into those companies, that there are just fewer and fewer opportunities to sell that in a market where budgets are depressed.
But, and again, I keep coming back to, because of the disruption you just talked about, they have to restructure their business.
Being
the sellers of technology into those organizations. If, you know, we picked on Grass Valley. Well, picked on's a little too strong.
Well, if you picked on, I mean,
we shined a light on Grass Valley.
I mean, we've heard many people, love the AMP concept.
Yeah, but I'm saying is, look at how non-agile that Grass Valley business was early this year. I don't mean that to be mean. I just mean to point out, in Q1, their SG&A expense was larger than their gross profit. That can't happen.
Yeah, but I think you're being unfair to Grass Valley. I'm not here to defend Grass Valley, but Avid was in the same boat because I don't know if you noticed, but there's a pandemic. And
that is a referendum on how non-agile your business is. If you have a business like AMP promises to be, where your costs or your delivery of your product is going to be directly matched against, you know, the revenues that you generate or the prices that your end users pay, you would never have that circumstance come into existence. You need to structurally reform today if that's what you were faced with in the first half of the year. Yeah. And now you have a reason to. If this didn't happen, then you could just sit there and say, well, you know, the NFL contract's coming up, or I think the Pac-12 network's going to get a bigger deal and they're going to really start to monetize Olympic sports. It's never going to happen. You have to revisit your assumptions there. You have to restructure your business, and now we can do that.
Tell me about the NFL TV rights are coming up. In the last time that happened, 8-9 years ago, drove a huge wave of spending. What's going to happen this time? Clearly, we hope the pandemic is over and everything's back to whatever normal is. What's your prediction for how that's going to impact tech spend?
Well, it'll grow it, right? But maybe it'll finally start to look different. You still see every time there's one of these big events, and I love these individuals involved. I think they're highly innovative, but, you know, friends have to be candid with one another. They're sitting around and flexing about how big their compounds are, how big their trucks are. That is not the future. You should not take pride in having a lot of tin and having a lot of people on site. We need to look at other models, and finally we can start to investigate them. We finally have a situation where people aren't going to make decisions saying, well, we always did it the other way. Well, look, we've had 6 months of doing it a fundamentally different way, and the world didn't end. You know, the sun still rose in the morning.
Okay, so let me ask my question again.
Yeah.
NFL football rights coming up. The deal will happen. Subsequent to that, there'll be some kind of tech investment. That's what happened before.
Tremendous tech investment.
And, of course, everybody will now have the tribal memory of doing things with less, or being this kind of potential for this extinction level event happening. So how is that going to feed into the way people think about that tech spending and deployment? And how do you think that will be similar or different than the way that it's always been, in air quotes?
Well, I think, you know, ideally we would see more centralization of a lot of that production. We would see more of the REMI topics that you were talking about. How much of this functionality can we pull back to some kind of central location? Can we condense or eliminate a lot of the travel? Do we need to have a lot of these redundant feeds? You know, can we streamline all those things? There's more innovative and forward-looking things. What can we start to do in venue to try to bring people back into the stands? What can we start to do as far as interactivity, as far as graphics at the user level? I mean, there's a lot of areas for innovation. But for this, though, it was going to be just a new fleet of trucks, and it might still be a new fleet of trucks, but I think it'll get deeper consideration than otherwise would have, because here in the U.S., we are just going to be the last people to change our behavior when it comes to how we produce sports.
So if I were to paraphrase what you just said, they're going to focus on doing more with less, which makes my point.
No. In terms of unit volume, right? I think, so let's take a specific example. In terms of replay servers, will fewer replay servers be sold than otherwise would have? Yes.
I don't know about that, because in the NBA, there are 13 camera positions for regular games. And I read probably in SVG, because that's where we read all this stuff because it's so good, that they have 30 cameras. So they have 30 channels of replay instead of 13 or whatever the number works out to be.
Okay. Well, so then two scenarios. Either they buy more equipment or they buy less. But in the instance where they buy less, that is a business model problem of the supplier. Your equipment isn't providing any less value, right? It's being used just as much. There's just fewer of it being utilized more. You need to change your pricing model. You need to change your business model. And that is something that, again, you otherwise would not have done. You would have said, hey, mate, I think we can squeeze one more iteration out of this.
Did you just say mate?
No.
I thought you said, hey, mate, we can squeeze one more.
No, you might. Maybe I dropped the syllable. I can't imagine. I would never say mate.
Can you say it with a Australian accent, maybe?
I can't do any accents. I think we collectively
Actually, you know what? Maybe that'll be our next T-shirt.
Yeah.
I can't do any accents or a hashtag. So, sure, I accept that. But in an environment, and again, let me ask you a question. And I know you want... How much of the NBA's revenue comes from in-venue tickets, concessions, that type of thing?
It's between 40% and 60%.
Okay, right? So everybody thinks, wow, look at these TV deals, but actually that's not where a lot of the money is coming from, and
players, and
players, you know, that money goes to the teams, to the players, etc. If people aren't comfortable going back to these events, there's going to be less of that money around. So one way of looking at it is, okay, how am I going to make up for the fact that we have a salary cap we've committed to pay these players whatever it is? We're going to have to get more for the TV rights in the future, because the money's got to come from someplace. And in an environment where, as I mentioned before, the pressure is always flowing downhill from the league to whoever becomes the right holder, to onto their service provider, onto the tech vendors. So you're saying, gee, tech vendors should just charge more money. How is that going to work in that environment?
I think they should better align their pricing models to where they add value.
I don't. I completely agree with
you. No. So don't let's not misunderstand. I think 2020 revenue is going to be down for the industry? Of course.
I'm not talking about 2020. Yeah. I'm talking about like a structural event that is going to be difficult for some companies to recover from potentially.
Absolutely. This is going to be an extinction level event for many of the practices and for the suppliers in the industry. I don't disagree with that for a second. I think 2021 will be lower than it would have otherwise been. I mean, of course, this is an impact to overall economic behavior. Lower economic activity is going to translate into, you know, lower revenues than otherwise would have been realized. But I say it's a net good thing when we look at, we'll finally get the structural reforms. And when we get to the other side of this, even if it is 2022, we'll have a much healthier supplier universe and we'll have a much healthier engineering departments within the customer universe, because they will have a different relationship with their finance teams. They will have data to actually highlight the value of what they're doing. I think they're going to have bigger budgets.
Okay, so coming back to my hypothesis, and again, not trying to be negative, et cetera, what you're saying is, or what I'm hearing you say, is that you agree with me. And as a result of that, when everything gets flushed out after a painful time, it reminds me of some slideware that we've used in presentations in the past, where it says, you know, you've got to get from here to there. And then it says, this is going to be really hard.
Yes.
Now, I mean, we've had those slides since 2012 or something. So what you're saying is, this is going to be really hard. Companies will go away, things will change. And then at some point in the future, we're going to have a better industry as a result of that. So that's the silver lining.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And we'll have a better industry than we would have otherwise.
So now you're the one being negative, because I am, you're agreeing
I don't view that as negative. So you're saying this is pessimistic because we only have one operating model. And as we go through this, you know, revenues are going to go down. And when we come out the other end, they're lower than they would have otherwise would have been. And yeah, I agree with that. But when we come out the other side, we won't have the same framework. We won't have the same model. We will actually have something that's sustainable.
It took like 45 minutes to get to where I thought we'd get. I mean, I did do a kind of a long-winded intro, but I think net-net, this is really positive, but there's going to be all kinds of change. You've talked a lot in the past about sales and marketing, about trade shows, about all sorts of stuff. And in fact, maybe, I don't know, maybe we could focus, not now, because we've been talking for a long time, but maybe we could focus a further episode of this on, like, what is the future of these different components where the money, and not picking winners and losers,
I would be happy to. And if I could just cite one data point, right? So, you know, we do this big survey every year, big broadcast survey, to try to understand these trends. Right?
I'm familiar with it. Yes.
So when
fantastic, when, not to give a shameless plug here, but it brings a smile to my face, because every time we go through that, or we take a new client through it, or do webinars with, you know, 50 or 100 people from the existing clients, as we're talking about that data. And of course, it just gets better every year, the value of it, because it just keeps building on it. I just always think to myself in the back of my mind, wow, this is just so, so amazing that this resource exists. Anyways.
So, and we pivoted quite quickly in the March timeframe. And so we started asking a question, could you please let us know which suppliers during the current environment are really performing well and which ones you would want to cite as performing poorly? Right?
In the context of the pandemic.
In the context of the pandemic. And I'll cite them in reverse alphabetical order, just the top five in terms of percentage of well versus poor. It's TVU, LiveU, AWS, and AWS Elemental. We actually track them separately. And Atem. What do all of those businesses have in common?
Compression.
I was going to say a similar business model. You know, TVU, LiveU. Those are more sort of SaaS offerings, subscription services, consumption-based pricing.
Yeah, hardware, right? SaaS.
And Atem has moved and is now talking more publicly about their managed service offering, right? Who is not doing good on that chart?
I'm going to guess, well, I know the answer, but I'm going to guess that if anybody's ever been to any of our events and they've seen the slideware around this, it's not going to surprise them when you get on this bandwagon.
And it's all the software systems that are tied to business rules, your MAM systems, your workflow engine. Those are all bringing up the rear of that chart. Those are intransigent management teams that just have accepted that my customers not liking me is an inherent part of my business. This disruption, that's it for you guys. If you don't find your religion now and fundamentally change your business models, then just turn the lights out when you're done, right? Because it's
I got to push back on that. Yeah. In an ideal Pollyanna-ish world, yes. But so I don't like my supplier, but my entire everything is built around them. It's kind of hard to say, okay, you got, I'm just not going to use you anymore. But I agree.
Let me say it different. You have no future, right? So if your customers don't like you, you have a very defined ceiling on what you can accomplish as a business.
Yeah, if an alternative comes along.
Right.
One of the other things, and we don't have time to go into it here, that's really interesting, since you brought up the survey, we paused, like everyone else paused, when everything went into lockdown, and then we resumed that. And one of the things that really struck me in our data is the difference in the responses to the same question pre, you know, let's say April 1st and post April 1st. And we don't have time to go into it here, but yeah, just super interesting and really revealing what we've heard from the customers about. We made 5 years of progress in 2 months, that everything's changed. People's attitudes have changed. The way we're doing things, the way we're thinking about things, all changed.
And so we've now taken up, you know, different sides of the argument. You've come over to my side for that. Where do you think my argument came from? It came from that information.
Oh, yeah. I don't like to think of these things as arguments. I mean, all it's right, really
spirited discussion, but a serious conversation.
Right. Yeah, serious conversation. I don't think we're taking the different sides of the argument, because I'm still talking about those tech vendors that are not going to have a good time.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So I started off saying, hey, talk me out of this. I think you've talked me into something else, or we've talked each other into something else, but it doesn't negate the fact that, as you're always saying, there needs to be serious conversations, and that time is
right now.
Is right now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay, bye.